So this is the time of year that people in many cultures and many faith traditions honor our ancestors. Samhain was on Monday, the marking of the moment in the wheel of the year in which night becomes longer than day, the time when we step into the darkness. Samhain is the Sabbat or holy day in which many people in pagan traditions remember their beloved dead. They say that the veil between the worlds of the living and the dead is thinnest on this day, that the spirits of our ancestors hover around us as we move through this world. In the sacred space they create for their celebrations, they speak the names of their beloved dead to honor them, just as we did this morning. This is also the time of Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, when many people of Mexico honor their ancestors by building elaborate altars, visiting each other in their homes, and celebrating at their graves. They say that their dead come to visit during this time, and they try to make their homes inviting for them. The idea of my beloved dead hovering around me offers me some measure of comfort, as I think it's meant to. I remind myself and others that what is remembered lives in every memorial service and every celebration of life for someone who has died. I offer those words out of my pagan tradition, which teaches us that death is necessary to make room for new things to be born. Without death, there can be no change, no growth. This is true on so many levels, right? Sometimes old ideas and old ways of being and doing have to die to make room for new understandings. That isn't to say we forget the old ways any more than we forget our ancestors. In fact, if we don't remember our history, the present suffers, which is another reason to think of our ancestors as hovering around us. I think there's a way that marking their presence in our lives can hold us accountable to their legacies, to acknowledge that they have indeed paid for us, as Maya Angelou said, with their sacrifices, with their work, with their courage, with their mistakes, with all of their experiences and impacts. I don't usually advocate for transactional ways of thinking and being. It makes me think of all the harm that's done by the systems of capitalism and consumerism, the impact of the grounding of our society on the idea that buying and pay for things just serves to remind us that we're not enough and that we don't deserve to think of ourselves enough if we can, as enough if we can't pay for it. That's for another reflection. I usually advocate for collaborative ways of thinking and being, for reminding ourselves of our connections and working from there over telling ourselves what we might owe one another. And as Deb reminded me, as we talked about these words from Maya Angelou, she reminded me of one of the pieces of our US history hovering around us, the piece that white colonists paid for, bought and sold other human beings for the purpose of enslaving them. The idea of our ancestors paying for us shifts my perspective on that history. As a Black woman whose direct ancestors include enslaved people, Maya Angelou has a different history around the ways her ancestors paid for her than I do, and I cannot speak to that. What I can speak to is how my cultural ancestors have paid for me. What did it cost those colonizers, I wonder, to inflict the kind of suffering they did on Black and Indigenous people? What did they have to give up in terms of their humanity, their spirits, to enslave and kill their human siblings? What has the cost of those acts paid for me and my generation? And what am I in turn called to do with the spirit of those acts hovering around me to pay for those yet to come?
Thanks, Karen.
I have a story to share with you this morning from my own personal experience about how someone honored what her ancestors had paid for her. This is something that happened to me on Election Day 2008, which, as you may remember, was when Barack Obama first ran for president. I had an experience that changed me deeply in the voting line at my neighborhood polling place. The weather was cold, damp, sharp wind and sleet and mist. I went to vote after work. The lines, as expected, were exceptionally long. As I waited to check in, I noticed an older Black woman at the nearby in-person registration table. And soon she joined me in waiting in line for a voting carrol. We struck up a conversation while we waited. Coming to work, come to vote on this nasty weather day had clearly cost her quite a bit of effort. She walked slowly with a cane, and there were no parking places close to the voting entrance of the school. Even to get in the door, which was an uphill climb from the street, would likely have been an uncomfortable experience for her. I was soon to find out just how uncomfortable. While we waited there, we had the usual conversation about how cold the weather was, and she explained that she almost hadn't come. It had been difficult to get a ride, she said, but she had finally done so through the Union Cab Free Rides to Polling Places program, which, by the way, if any of you have difficulty getting to a polling place, it's something to definitely take advantage of. It still exists to this day. However, she went on, despite the difficulty, she wanted to vote on what she saw as an historic occasion, a Black man, a man with the skin the same color as hers, running for president of the United States. She was trembling slightly from nervousness, from the cold, from the effort of standing, I couldn't tell. The woman went on to explain that she was 62 years old and had never voted before. In fact, she was the first person in her family, as far back as she knew, to ever have voted. She went on to explain that she was voting not only to exercise her own rights and to be part of history in the making, but also to speak for the generations of ancestors before her who couldn't or didn't vote. And she also wanted to set an example for those who were younger. I was scared to do it, she said, but I am determined. This is the right thing to do. As I stepped away to cast my own ballot, I thanked her for her vote and for her courage. I hadn't wanted to go out and vote that day in that weather. I was tired after long hours at work, and I just wanted to get home. When I walked into the polling place, I saw voting as just another duty on a long list of things to get done. I left with a changed attitude.
Deb, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, for telling it to me a couple of weeks ago, and for sharing it with everyone. Their story shifted my thinking, too, toward participating in our democracy as a way to pay for those who are yet to come, in the light of this Maya Angelou quote. One of the seven union principles that I don't talk about very much is the fifth one. Who knows what that one is? Yes, thank you, Kelly. That we covenant to promote and affirm the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Like the other six, this principle is rooted in our theology and in our history as a faith tradition. Unitarian Universalism asks of us that we live our lives in a way that is consistent with a set of values that are foundational for a safe and fair world for all of us. We're rooted in the theological understanding that all of us are loved and worthy of love, that we are inextricably connected to each other and everything around us, that we all deserve to be our full selves in all of our glory and all of our imperfection, that we're already saved, and that we have to change in response to the continually changing world and our understanding of it. From these theological roots grow a call to build a world that operates as if these things are actually true. A world in which we humans treat each other with love, in which we honor the connections between us, in which all beings are free to live fully and fearlessly, in which we focus on this world and on learning and growth and a desire to do better for others. One of the ways we do that is through shared decision making. At our best, we talk about things. We listen to other perspectives in the room. We invite others with still different perspectives into the room. And when it comes time to make a decision, we take all of those perspectives into consideration and we take a vote. This is much harder than putting someone in charge and making them responsible for the decisions. And it's a way of living our values, our theology, and our history. I think it's also a way of being worth the cost that our ancestors paid for us. We know our history, right? We know that white men who owned and held, we know that white men who owned land held the power in our young country. We know they set up the system to hold on to that power by limiting who could vote. African Americans couldn't legally vote until the 15th Amendment, which was ratified in 1870. And they couldn't vote in practice because of poll taxes and literacy tests and fraud and intimidation that kept them from getting to the polls until the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And I know fraud and intimidation have not ended. The 15th Amendment of 1870 left out women completely. And that didn't change until the 19th Amendment of 1920, and many women were kept away from the polls by discriminatory state voting laws after the 19th Amendment, long into the 20th century. Our commitment to the democratic process is a theological one, right? It's reflected in our fifth principle, and it's informed by the history of how our Black and women ancestors paid for having a say in our collective life, as well as the history of the spiritual debt our white ancestors had to pay to keep their human siblings oppressed. Oof. I didn't realize how big that was when I wrote it until I said it out loud. Our commitment to the democratic process is a theological one, as reflected in our fifth principle. It is informed by the history of how our Black and women ancestors paid for having a say in our collective life. And it's informed by the history of the spiritual debt our white ancestors had to pay to keep their human siblings oppressed. Many you use, including Reber's, do elections work, like getting out the vote postcards that we've been writing, thanks to Megan Barry organizing that, like working the polls to ensure all voices are heard in response to those calls, and I am grateful for that. I personally plan to honor the theology and the history by using my right to vote to pay for those who come after me. to continue to build the world of safety and fairness for everyone. We are our future's past, the ancestors of the generations to come. And it is on us to make it so what we pay for, our descendants, is worth it. May it be so, and may we be so.